I'm the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is such a pleasure to see all of you here today. And I want you to know that every single person here is welcome. You're welcome whether this is your first day in this congregation. You're welcome if you came alone. You're welcome if you came with others. You're welcome if you've been coming for years. You're welcome if your heart is broken today. And you're welcome if you're filled with joy and possibilities for life. Everyone is welcome. And everyone is welcome because you are each a beloved child of the universe. And nothing can take that away. I have one announcement this morning. We now have a small youth council in our congregation who meet, yes, who are making lots of plans and meet twice a month. And today they are having a bake sale, which is their first fundraiser for their organization. So there are some amazing things that they have baked for us, including gluten-free things. I'm very grateful. And so you can do that after the service with your coffee. We have coffee downstairs after the service. There's also a link on, if you got your order of service in the mail this morning and you're online, you can go to the coffee hour that's online to talk to other people from the congregation or who are visiting. And if you are new today, we really ask that you fill out the little form that's on your chairs. Annie's going to show it to you. And that way you can get the e-blast and the announcements and all the things that are happening in this congregation. So thank you. Now take a moment to greet one another. Say hello. Don't start conversations. Hello to lots of people.
My name is Christine Leffler, and I am your lay leader today. Here's a reading by Lynn Harrison for the chalice lighting. We join together this day with loving hearts, hands, and minds, embracing the interconnected web of water, air, and earth to create a new world, not of wealth, but of well-being, as we give thanks for this earth, our shared and singular home. May we dedicate ourselves to its ongoing care. And now Ada will light the chalice. Please join me as we say our affirmation. Okay. Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors. I have a reading for you from Rosemary Watola Traumer. And if it's true we are alone together, the way blades of grass are alone but exist in a field. Sometimes I feel it. The green fuse that ignites us, the wild thrum that ignites us, an inner hum that reminds us of our shared humanity. Just as 35 trillion red blood cells join in one body to become one blood, just as 136,000 notes make up one symphony. Alone as we are, our small voices weave into one big conversation. Our actions are essential to the one infinite story of what it is to be alive. When we feel alone, we belong to the grand communion of those who sometimes feel alone. We are the dust that hopes, a rising of dust, a thrill of dust, the dust that dances in the light with all other dust, the dust that makes the world. Please rise as you are willing and able to sing hymn 134, Our World is One World. Bum.
Our world is one world. What touches and affects us all? The seas that wash us round about, the clouds that cover think affect us all. The way we build our attitudes with love or hate we make a bridge or wall. Our world is one world. The ways of wealth affect us all. The way we spend, the rich or poor, who stand or fall. Our world is one world, just like a ship that bears us all, where fear and greed make many falls, but where our hearts can hear a different call.
Let us remember. Let us remember to turn on the mic. Let's remember the things that we are grateful for. The fellowship here, the music, the rain, the flowers. I invite the ushers up to get the baskets. Do we have ushers? Please join me. Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others.
Okay.
Heart is so full after that. We're so blessed here. So this is our time for all ages, and we do have front room in the front. If anyone wants to come forward for the story this morning, we're happy to have you. So this story is called Outside In by Deborah Underwood, illustrated by Cindy Derby. Once we were part of outside, and outside was part of us. There was nothing between us. And now sometimes, even when we're outside, we're inside. We forget outside is there. So outside reminds us with flashes at the window and slow magic tricks. It sends the sunset and shadows inside to play. Outside sings to us with chirps and rustles and tap taps on the roof. It beckons with smells, sun-baked, fresh and mysterious. Outside feeds us. Sun, rain, and seeds become warm bread and berries. Outside cuddles us in clothes, once puffs of cotton. It holds us in wooden chairs, once trees. We feel outside in the warm weight of our cats and the rough fur of our dogs. Outside shows us there is a time to rest, a time to start fresh, outside steals inside, a spider seeking shelter, a box elder bug in the bath, a tiny snail on kale. Even rivers come inside, and water, cool water rushing, eager to return to the sea. I'm here, outside says, I miss you. Outside waits, and we answer. That is our story for today. We will now sing our children to their classes. There's so much joy in this world. We can see it in the flowers outside our window, in the story, in the music we shared this morning, and the poems. There's so many good ways that people are with each other that is kind and lovely. And there's also much suffering in the world. The world is always breaking apart. Things are dying. We get sick. The unexpected happens so frequently that can cause suffering. And one reason we gather in community is to be able to hold those joys and sufferings together, to be able to help each other through those experiences. And so we will now do joys and sorrows. If you would like, you may come up this aisle and place a stone in the water for your that represents your joy or your sorrow. If you'd like to speak a sentence into the mic sharing your joy and sorrow with us, we would love to hear that. But if you'd like to do it silently, that's also fine. Now place one last stone for all the joys and sorrows that remain in our hearts. We will now stay seated and sing 398, The World in a Piece of Sand. William Blake.
To see the world in a grain of sand, and the heaven in a wild flower, hold infinity in the palm of your hand, and eternity in an hour.
Now is time for our meditation, reflection, and prayer, as is your tradition. And today, if you want something to consider while in this space of silence, I want you to think about a place that you love, a place that is full of non-human life, plants, animals. So not a bookstore, that's what I'm saying. Okay. So think of a place you love, and maybe there's a place in the world that feels like you belong in it. It's like it just feels that way when you're there. If you have such a place, think of that place. And in these moments, just hold that place close to you that you love. Notice it. Remember how it smells.
looks like, the sounds you might hear there. Just settle for a moment in that place.
The Day Millicent Found the World by William Stafford. Every morning, Millicent ventured further into the woods. At first, she stayed near light, the edge where bushes grew, where her way back appeared in glimpses among the dark trunks behind her. Then further paths or openings, where giant pines had fallen, she explored ever deeper into the interior, till one day she stood under a great dome among the columns, the heart of the forest, and knew. Lost. She had achieved a mysterious world where any direction would yield only surprise. And now, not only the giant trees were strange, but the ground at her feet had a velvet nearness. Intricate lines on bark wove messages all around her. Long strokes of golden sunlight shifted over her feet and hands. She felt caught up and breathing in a great, powerful embrace. A bird call wandered forth at leisurely intervals from an opening on her right. Come away, come away. Never before had she let herself realize that she was part of the world and that it would follow wherever she went. She was part of its breath. Aunt Dolby called her back that time, a high voice tapering faintly among the farthest trees. Millicent! Millicent! At that time she returned, but slowly, her dress fluttering along, pressing back branches, her feet stirring up the dark smell of moss, and her face floating forward, a stranger's face now, with a new depth in it, into the light.
A couple of weeks ago, I was in Spokane, where I grew up, and raised my sons to celebrate my mother's 80th birthday. One day, I was out walking with one of my sons, who lives in Seattle now. He said with a deep sigh, "It always feels like home here." I always feel that way, too, in Spokane, among the ponderosa pine and expansive sky, a deep relaxation, as if the land reaches out and embraces me in a hug of welcome to a place where I have always belonged. I am curious about this experience. How is it true? How is it that I feel with my whole being that I belong to this place? In our language, we don't have much in our language or in the ways we categorize experiences to explain that. It's not an uncommon experience. Many people feel this sense of home in places where they live for long stretches of their childhood or long stretches of adulthood, or maybe a place that you just happened upon that you know you belong to. This deep belonging, not for houses, but for the place itself, the trees, the plants, the particular quality of the air, the flow of the seasons. While this is not an uncommon experience, it is much less common for people to make a commitment to the places where they feel they most belong. We don't often, as a culture, honor how our spirit, heart, and bodies can become tangled with a particular ecosystem. In fact, it's not really even something most of us believe in. It's not a conversation Americans are very likely to have. And I believe that we are unlikely to have these conversations, is because we consider ourselves separate from, as we say, nature. Even the word nature itself is an example of how we view the world. Inherent in the world is the idea that there is us, humans, and all of our things, and then there is everything else, and that's nature. The word nature in its very conception contains an us-them concept. And we say it all the time, constantly reinforcing that there's the human world and there's the natural world. And this whole construction is absolutely untrue. Biologically, there is no us and them. There is just life, evolved to work in numerous interlocking webs. Individuals and species are part of a complicated working web that, when all is well, supports life itself. And we are at a time in human history when we need to experience our interconnection to all of life. The future of billions of species and the flourishing of today's children's grandchildren depends on us experiencing and knowing this essential truth. We have become so separated from non-human life that ecosystems can be dying around us and we don't really even notice in our day-to-day lives. We are so separated that we rarely know the fields our food was grown on or how it was tended and if there was poison or pain there. And we still can eat it, not knowing these things. So much must happen, as I'm sure all of you are aware, to bring the web of life back into balance. And one place that I think is ours to do is to begin knowing and experiencing our interconnection and living as if it was true. The culture that we live in, Western culture, was created to exert control. Maybe it wasn't created with this intention, but it has done this. It exerts control over places, over all kinds of life forms, and over people so that some get to profit. Our natural ability to connect to people or to places or to animals or plants has to be severed in order to exert power over that harms. We can't harm if we think something has moral meaning to us. We know this because that's the only way wars can be fought. You have to believe the other side is evil or non-human in order to kill them. And this is actually what we have to do as well. When we turn all of the non-human world into natural resources, that's really what we call it, resources. And those resources are for our well-being and life. That's what we often think about. So to experience interconnection, we have to change perspective, which we talked about last week. We have to work to override the dominant cultural views that the world is separate from humans and exists for our use instead of the flourishing of life as a whole. Each one of us, all of us, are wound into the universe, and this is not a metaphor. This is not intellectual, and it's not theoretical. This is physical, it's emotional, and it's spiritual. The physical is absolutely the easiest to notice. For example, we are water. 60% of each of your bodies, of my body, is water. And water moves through and over the whole earth. Water moves through and over us, just as it does through trees or tulips or soil or streams. We may say, my body is over half water. Or we could say instead, we are flowing water. The first statement is a statement of separation. My body is half water. Sounds like we are a solid container holding water. Water is a resource that makes our lives possible. The second statement, we are flowing water, recognizes the way liquid constantly moves through our bodies, flowing, water in and out, water in and out, rain pouring on Mount Hood, flowing into the Bull Run watershed, racing through pipes, flowing through our bodies, back into pipes and treatment basins, emptying into the Columbia, and at last into the Grand Pacific. Our bodies have evolved to be part of the great earth cycle of water. We are rain on the way to the sea. We are also part of the breath of the world. We breathe every moment of our lives. Taking a breath is the first thing a baby must do, and we exclaim with joy when it happens. And when breath ends, life ends. And we grieve. We breathe in oxygen. It becomes part of our blood and is used by our cells as part of a complex chemical reaction to create the energy that makes us. That breath that each of you just took just now, that you probably didn't even notice, enlivens us. We cannot be without air. Each inhalation transforms our blood and cells. So is not the air part of us? How can we ever consider that we are separate? Each of us is part of the circulation system of the earth. When we exhale, we release carbon dioxide, a waste product of all that cell energy production, into the air. When the plants breathe in, which they do, they take this element we didn't need, combine it with water, and through the miraculous gift of photosynthesis, turn them into sugar and oxygen. The sugar is the energy for all of life that exists. Each breath weaves us together with every other life. Then there is food. To live, we must eat. We must eat life. Other forms of life create the energy, protein, fat, and other nutrients that we require to live. One way to think about life is that it is in the creation business. Life is a continuous flow of elements that come together in one way, pause in that form, then destruct and become another form. Life is create, destruct, create, destruct, create, destruct. We pull a carrot from the ground, it dies, but its elements become our bodies, our energy, our tissue, our healing capacities, our thoughts. The carrot begins as a very, very tiny seed, so small that when it lands on the soil, it disappears. Something, and we don't know what exactly, urges that carrot to grow, to take the elements from the air and soil and sun and turn them into a crisp, sweet root, made to take water and nutrients from the soil, but also tastes very good on human tongues. There's interconnection. And be compelled by the interconnecting force of hunger to seek that carrot, we crush it between our teeth. We swallow it. And then the carrot becomes us. I wonder sometimes why it takes us so long to consider the carrot part of ourselves. We consider it a separate entity until our small intestine sends the carrot's nutrients into our bloodstream, or maybe it's when our cells turn the nutrients into tissue and thought. I'm not sure we're exactly clear when the carrot becomes us, but it does. So why don't we consider the carrot or the water, or the air, part of ourselves much sooner? Because they are going to become part of us, absolutely. If we considered everything that would eventually become us as ourselves, or at least as a very close intimate to us, we would have very different relationships with the earth, water, air, plants, and animals. doing self-care would constitute radically different activities than it does now. Being human would require us to care for all that will become us, just as now being human requires caring for our bodies through eating, sleeping, and movement. Our daily activities and economic education systems would all necessarily be focused on the central understanding of what is important to us. Poor Ian. Poor Ian's dad. Some indigenous people conceptualize plants and animals as members of their family. They are relationships with moral obligations, with give and take, much like the relationships that we all have with people or our pets. Other life is categorized, other life is not categorized as it, like we use the pronoun it for a tree, but as they, she, he, pronouns that offer moral responsibility to them. So let's just think about this for a moment. Consider a tree that you know. Maybe one you see from your window at home, or lives in your neighborhood, or is on a walk that you take. If you can't think of a particular tree, just look out the window and you'll find a tree or a bush that you could use. And just think about a moment that this tree or bush is a brother or a sister, actually a member of your family, and all that that means. How does your perspective on that tree change? What might be different in life if that tree really was a relative? Cultures create language and basic concepts about how the world works because they are useful and work well enough to survive in whatever environment we find ourselves in. And humans have created, someone estimates, 31,000 different languages. And it could be higher. I mean, how do you figure that out? And around 7,000 are still spoken. Each language frames the world slightly differently. These frames can be changed. That's one of the ways that culture changes. It's hard to change language and cultural concepts. They are just hardwired into our brains. We know this because we are doing it right now in our culture as we develop a new singular they to identify people who do not experience themselves as male or female. Certainly, people experienced this way of being human well before the 21st century. But since our culture just didn't recognize that way of being human, we just had no words for it. And that is what we do. If a culture dismisses certain aspects of the human experience, it just doesn't have a word for it. Then it becomes hard to believe that it's even real. It's kind of like cultural gaslighting. But right now, we do recognize that some people have a wider conception of their gender, and we are really honoring and respecting that. So it means we need new language. Once we have that language and just use it easily, like the next generation probably will, the next generation of children are going to have, from birth, a wider range of gender options because the gender spectrum is visible in the language and the way we interact with people in their world. And this is for the good of all of us. But the transition itself, the change, can feel awkward. Similarly, we need new language and ways of conceiving our interconnection with all of existence. Might we call water and potential food close intimates? Could we consider the trees and rivers and flowers as close relatives? Being in the non-human world affects our emotions and our spirits. This is a different level of relationship than food being broken down into nutrients in our gut. This is our felt experience of being alive in the world. Being outdoors, surrounded by trees and plants, and away from human-built environments often makes us more relaxed, happier, and at ease. The weather,
gray and stormy or warm and sunny affects our moods. We talk about that all the time. And the poets speak of it. In Stafford poems, he writes of Millicent, that never before had she let herself realize that she was part of the world and it would follow her wherever she went. Tromer names her experience of the wild thrum that unites us. Meanwhile, science has discovered that for optimal functioning, we need time in the non-human world. Research shows that nature exposure, as they call it, it's kind of like that natural resource, improves thinking. It improves our blood pressure, our heart health, and it lessens depression and anxiety. It decreases pain and the effects of chronic illness. When we are in nature, as we say, even in our park or a yard, our brains, they've studied this, our brains release biochemicals that make us feel happy and good and decrease those that cause us to feel stressed. And when we touch the earth, flush to soil with bare feet and ungloved hands, the earth's negative electrical charge neutralizes free radicals in our bodies that can cause inflammation and other damage. Studies show that the practice reduces inflammation and symptoms of mental illness and also improves circulation and sleep. So what do we do with all of this? If we want to learn to sense and know interconnection, we have to start just by paying attention to our experience and to our places. And we need to play a lot. Like in the sermon, I'm just playing with different ways we could conceive of our relationship with nature. I'm sure there's so many that people could play and imagine. And we just need to enjoy, because enjoy is one of the deep connections we have with life and with other people and with the world. And as you know, I'm a big believer in practicing. And I'll tell you why. This is because for humans to change and transform, we have to change the neural pathways in our brain, which means we have to do things intentionally over and over until new neural pathways are up and working. And this goes back to they as a singular. I mean, we know that if you have someone in your life that you call they all the time, it becomes very simple. But if you're a person who rarely is in interaction with people who you call they, it takes your brain kind of clicks and messes that up sometimes. So it's that practice that matters. And there are, I imagine, hundreds, thousands of practices that can help us feel interconnection with the non-human world. And I'm just going to offer you three that I've been playing with lately. Say thank you for your food. A real moment of gratitude for the particular plants and animals that you are eating. In the morning, I say thank you for oats and blueberries and whoever created almond yogurt, and to the almond trees, and to the people who farmed and processed and labored to bring those items to Portland so I could purchase them and put them all together in one bowl for breakfast. As you can imagine, this gratitude can go on, and it gets very intricate very quickly, and you quickly learn all you do not know. Because a lot happened to get whatever you ate for breakfast to you. Another practice is to become friends with a tree. Find a tree that you like. Introduce yourself. Spend time together. Eat together. Maybe draw pictures of your friend, take photos, write poems. You might want to sleep out under your friend. Listen to them. Some people hear trees speak to them. Speak to the tree. Ask it its advice. And just pay attention to what happens. What is the quality of difference in that kind of relationship versus tree as an it? Another practice is when you're in the non-human world and it affects your spirit or emotions in some way, pay attention to that. Let the feelings sink in. Notice them as real and important. We need to pay attention to those feelings and sensations for at least 30 seconds for them to get encoded in your brain in some way. So you really just need to soak in and notice that you are having an emotional, spiritual relationship with what's there. So I've started doing this, and I realized that I go to Spokane to not only be hugged by my mother and some of my closest friends, but by that land that raised me up. It held me in sorrow. It celebrated with me in joy. It nurtured me with soft winds and sunny days and crunchy snow and brisk mornings and her very sweetest moments of love, which is dusk in summer in Spokane. I think is about as good as life gets. And I am recognizing how much that connection matters to me and nourishes me. I don't understand it scientifically. I don't really have much of a relationship, language for that relationship. But I understand that it speaks to some kind of connection that I really have with the earth. And I know that paying attention and honoring my actual lived experience can be the basis for new language, understandings, and relationship. I am here, outside says, in this morning's story. I miss you. The outside waits. So let us answer and be known for the company we keep. We will rise and sing. Led by Karen and Debbie.
We shall be known by the company we keep, by the ones who circle round to tend these fires. We shall be known by the ones who sow and reap the seeds of change alive from deep within the earth. It is time now. It is time now that we thrive. It is time we lead ourselves into the well. It is time now, and what a time to be alive. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love. In this great turning we shall learn to lead in love.
For reasons I don't understand at all, a little time, and so we wanted to maybe do comments or questions if people have them. Christine will take the mic around.
Hello, I'm James.
Hello.
I have a discussion after this. I got here a little late, and so I did not tell Tracy that I wanted to speak, but this ended up being great. If you want to be a part of service, and you are young or you are not young, and you think that your voice would like to be heard, please come talk to me, because I want to get people involved in getting up there and sharing their personal experiences, or literally whatever you want. If you want to...
Where is the disembodied voice?
Hi, I'm here. Hello. I have a body. and we're going to be talking just past the kitchen, between like the kitchen and Forest Hall. So if you want to grab a coffee and come talk to me about literally whatever you want, whatever you think this service needs to hear, I would love to talk to you.
That's awesome. I am thrilled.
Hi, I'm Barbara Joy, and I want to encourage anyone and everyone to go visit Tryon Creek. We went there, was it yesterday or the day before, and the trilliums are blooming, and it's just a beautiful place to do forest bathing and enjoy exactly what the service was about.
My personal favorite place at Tryon Creek is the Mary Oliver Bench.
Tracy, your reminisce about Spokane reminded me of the great T.S. Eliot quote, which is, "We shall not cease from exploration, and at the end of our exploring will be to arrive where we started and know the place for the first time."
That's lovely. That's great. Yeah, I spent my whole life wanting to leave Spokane, so there you are.
I just want to thank you, Reverend Terry, for having this particular sermon, because it speaks to me deeply. I've always been very much involved with the seventh principle, and I have to admit to you, you may think I'm nuts, but I often talk to animals, look them directly in the face, and sometimes they follow me. I don't know. But I had a special relationship with a mother osprey in a nest that I was monitoring for the Connecticut Audubon, and I called her girlfriend, and she she would look at me and wonder what I was trying to say. But it was a very good relationship. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, one more. Okay, we got two more. After this, Ralph, and then we'll...
It's really funny that you should say that, because at our meet, what did we call it, speed friendly last night, one of the questions was, if you had a choice, would you rather be able to speak to animals or speak all the different languages of the world? And I knew exactly what my answer was. Speak to animals. I'm like you. You know, a dragonfly sits on a lit branch, and I'll just have a conversation with it. A one-sided conversation.
Ralph, back there. Where's Ralph?
Oh, Ralph.
Thank you, Tracy, for the wonderful sermon. I think if we're able to be part of the world we're in, that the relationship could change from destructive actions to more positive ones. So
that's what we would hope for sure. So I invite you all to go into the world and visit the outside. And we will now extinguish our chalice.
And our own forest, too.
Yeah. Our forest is pretty amazing. I extinguish the chalice, but not the care and love of this community. May it go with you into the world today. You may rise, and the first people can face the front people face the back, and the next people face forward. We hold hands for this, but if you're a person who really doesn't like that, you can just put your hands over your chest and don't hold hands.